I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we are going to laugh at an imaginary stadium in 2028. Okay, not quite. The A's came out with renderings for their new ballpark in Las Vegas, and we're going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about the Pirates. We're going to talk about Tyler Glasnow. And we're going to get sad because one of our favorite pitchers, Lucas Giolito, is injured. But we're still going to have a good time.
And just like our podcasts, we're going to ask the question, is spring training too long? Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that's been to Las Vegas but has never gambled there. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And we went when we were 20 years old and stayed near the airport.
Oh, man, that is so true. That is an accurate statement. What an incredible introduction to this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast. We will be going to Vegas, baby, for the first half of this show as the Oakland A's have released their renderings for their brand spanking new ballpark that definitely is going to be built exactly as it is portrayed for 2028. For sure. That's definitely happening. We're going to talk about the renderings because honestly, ballpark renderings, it's just wonderful podcast fodder. And we really want to dig into some of the nitty gritty details that they surely focused on and wanted everyone to be paying very close attention to. We're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates. Listen, I know we've been spending a lot of time in the early episodes of this show talking about the big market Dodgers and Giants and Phillies and Yankees, but I want to talk about the Buccos. I'm not wearing this hat by accident. I think they've had some interesting stuff going on at their spring training, including Paul Skeens, Henry Davis, all kinds of stuff. So we're going to talk about that. Got some unfortunate injury news regarding one of our favorite people in baseball, Lucas Giolito. We're going to talk about him a little bit later. Hit on Tyler Glasnow, another tall right-hander who is thankfully healthy.
I would love to hit on Tyler Glasnow.
I think a lot of people would before we say goodbye. But Jake, how are you? It's Wednesday. What are the vibes before we have fun with these A's renderings? How are we feeling?
I was feeling sluggish this morning. I'm not going to lie. Okay, I didn't sleep great. But then I sat down here at my desk. I got a new rug beneath my feet. Okay. And then I opened these A Stadium renderings. And it was like a wave of warmth that rushed over me. Because the joy of the ridiculousness of this story makes me so happy. Now, before we dive into it, a reminder. This still sucks for Oakland A's fans. Even though it is funny, it is a bummer for them that jokes about their team leaving are still about their team leaving. Mm-hmm. That being said, oh my God, I can't wait to just zoom in on these pictures and banter with you.
Yeah, and you know, I know that this process has been drawn out and will continue to be drawn out. We've already talked about the fact that they're still going to be playing in Oakland this year. This has been messy. This is a messy breakup that is obviously just unfortunate for so many reasons. Before we even get to the specifics of the photos, let's also just highlight the fact that it seems like we weren't actually supposed to know about these until today, which is an amazing thing. Basically, there was a press release that went out from the company who has, I guess, been contracted to design this new ballpark in Vegas. And they were like, here are these fancy photos and these details. And then all the people that got it immediately tweeted out the photos, because if I got those in my inbox, I would also post them as soon as possible.
I would get a tattoo of them.
Apparently, there was a follow-up like 6 minutes later that was like, this is embargoed until Wednesday, so please don't share it. Okay, obviously that did not work. And instead, now we do have the official tweet from the A's saying, hey, here's what our ballpark's going to look like in Vegas in 2028. And we have four images, Jake Mintz. We have four images of these of this stadium.
Before listening to the rest of this segment, just go on your phone or your BlackBerry or your Palm Pilot or your computer and go to
your
A's
Tamagotchi.
Twitter
just
or your Tamagotchi.
Yep.
Go to the A's Twitter account and just spend some time with them.
Yes.
Really like zoom in on these renderings. Let the fat extract and get into your sauce like a real rendering. Okay. And now we will open up our can of banter.
Okay. I would like to, we are going to focus the bulk of, I think, of our energy on one photo in particular, right? We have four images. Three of them are from the outside, which really highlights both the size, the background, and most importantly, I think the roof. Okay, I think the first thing that really hits you when you, you know, open these images is, oh, that's the Sydney Opera House in Las Vegas. And when you see it next to all these other fake versions of things across the world, which inhabit the strip in Las Vegas, it's like, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense. But also it's a baseball stadium. So that's a funny place to start.
Let's start with Sydney Opera House, Jordan. I have seen the Sydney Opera House twice. IRL.
Oh my gosh.
IRL. Okay. I was there 2 months ago.
So okay? then tell me, is this a fair comparison?
Yes and no. Yes and no. If we think it looks like the Sydney Opera House, then it looks enough like the Sydney Opera House. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like it, the facts don't really matter. The Sydney Opera House is a marvel of modern architecture. And for there to be a janky replica of it in Las Vegas, honestly, is perfect. So I am in favor of that knockoff because that's what this town is all about, right? There's a fake Eiffel Tower and a fake Statue of Liberty. Like, if this is good, that I'm fine with. It was incredibly difficult to build the Sydney Opera House because all of like the panels on the exterior had to be individually like casted in order to get that shape and curvature. I imagine we have better technology now to build that. There is so much wrong with this rendering. However, I like the outside. Gotta say.
Okay.
Don't mind the outside.
The last part on the Sydney Opera House before we move to the main image of evaluation that we are going to focus on this podcast is the size. And this is really where I want your recent experience seeing the Sydney Opera House in person is, does the Sydney Opera House look like it could be a baseball, strictly from a size standpoint? Like I'm trying to wrap my mind around something that has this architecture that also fits a Major League Baseball park. Now, listen, we do know that the plans for this ballpark are for it to likely have the smallest or one of the smallest capacities in Major League Baseball. And that's fine. I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I understand why they would do that. And I think there's some advantages to that. But I'm mostly grappling with the scale. Like, when you saw the Sydney Opera House, did you think they could fit a baseball stadium there? Like, no way, right?
So yes and no. So the thing that's important to understand about the Sydney Opera House is that it's often seen from what I'll call the open side, like a hitter. The Sydney Opera House was actually like two sets of buildings emerging off the pier. And so I think, yes, you could maybe fit a baseball stadium if you combined the two sets of structures. But the Sydney Opera House is kind of much more elongated. Like it's thinner
it's
and
not
longer.
Tall enough. Probably not tall enough for big league fly balls. Yeah.
No. But it does make a lot of sense that the A's are preemptively making a small stadium following in the footsteps of the Miami Marlins and recognizing that maybe people don't want to come watch this.
Let's dive into our main image here. Now, this fourth image is essentially a view. And again, hopefully you've already seen this. This is a view from behind home plate looking out over the field, which allows us to see not just the skyline, I guess, beyond the open windows that are beyond left center field, but also the scoreboard that seems to extend over the roof, and then some details on the field of play that we are certainly going to get into. Let's start with the very obvious point. The people pointing out that this was or probably in some level made with AI is a totally fair thing, but I'm also going to point out this is probably a pretty realistic and reasonable use of AI. I don't think that using AI for renderings like this is some sort of moral failing. Like, I would expect them to do that. However, it produces some extremely goofy results in terms of what the field of play looks like.
Look, we did not attend school during the AI era.
Mm-hmm.
Would I have used AI to help me in various aspects of my education? Yeah. But not being an idiot, you use it as a starting point, Jordan. And if I have to write five paragraphs about Macbeth, I'm not copy and pasting from ChatGPT, right? I'm making some edits. Mm-hmm. And that is my biggest issue, my macro issue with this photo.
Sure.
Is that they took the AI rendering and then just tweeted it out or emailed it out.
Sure, okay? Looks that way. Yeah. Yeah.
It sure looks that way. And there are pinstripes that are totally wonky of people in the crowd. There are jerseys that don't spell letter, like with not real letters.
That's how you know. Again, this is how you know. Because again, we've seen people just when they're tweeting out, like we've seen versions of this like in college baseball where it's like, make me a stadium like an LSU baseball stadium if it was a Roman
on the
cathedral,
moon.
You know, on the moon, right? And then like it basically spits out images that are similar to this. But let's move that those tiny details aside because there's so much else we can chew on anyway.
No, that's funny. To me, that's an unforgivable miss here, is that it highlights a lack of attention to detail. Sure. If you believe in the legitimacy of these renderings for a big fancy new stadium that has drawn the ire of the national baseball community, you need to double check that your stadium has lights in it, has real dugouts. Okay.
No dugout railing and no netting.
No netting. Okay?
No netting and no netting dugout railing is very troubling. No netting behind home.
No fence in left center field. It is a translucent fence. It is a totally see-through fence. Okay. Yeah, it is a see-through fence.
I'm more okay with the outfield fence being translucent.
Okay.
And there being a fence you can't see than no netting behind home plate.
My point is, you can't just go, oh, well, it's AI. It's still public, and we're still judging you on it, and you should have known that.
I don't care that much. I think I don't want to take them too seriously. I want to laugh at some of the other elements, okay? Let's talk about the scoreboard. Many people have pointed out, first of all, shouts out Zach Geloff. This is essentially an indirect acknowledgement that Zach Geloff is now the face of the A's franchise. Which may or may not be true. He had a great rookie season. We're certainly rooting for Zach Geloff moving forward. So good for
him. He had 300 plate appearances in the major leagues, and we're putting his picture on the fake scoreboard that's never going to get built.
Okay, who would you pick? Okay, so to that point, this brings up another funny thing, right? So let's talk about the lineups.
Yeah.
Many observant folks, I saw Kyle Kishimoto had a good thread about this, and I was kind of digging into this. These lineups, which appear to be a game against the Angels, seem to be pulled almost directly from a September 1st game that the Angels and A's played. Okay, great. But the funny part is that they swapped out Ohtani for Trout in the DH spot, and then they very randomly adjusted the batting averages on both sides. Some of them are exactly the batting averages that those players had. Some of them are massively inflated. I looked at Shea Langeliers. I was like, Shea Langeliers, no shot he hit 286 last year. So I love that they inflated all those. But again,
Randall Grichuk, not on the Angels anymore, but they felt the need to take Ohtani out of the lineup, but they kept Grichuk in there.
And Mike Moustakas, forget Grichuk. They keep Mike Moustakas in there. So whatever. But again, remember, what year is it when the stadium's opening? 2028. And to which I have to ask, how many of players on either of these teams are still on either of these teams in 2028? Zach Geloff is probably the best bet. It's not a guarantee, but I would say Zach Geloff is probably the best bet. But again, you want to put... I was talking to my wife about this. She made the good point, which is just like, wouldn't it have just been easier to put a very basic, like, welcome to Vegas ballpark graphic on the big screen as a way to show, like, so that we couldn't be making fun of your imaginary lineups, which is true. But I'm glad that they decided to put in some amount of acknowledgement that Major League Baseball will be played there, but then also change some details at complete random. It's so funny to me.
So here's the AI thing. AI did not do this.
No.
So they pasted this scoreboard on top of the AI rendering. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the physical scoreboard here. This is like supposed to be the Vegas Sphere style thing. Is the entire ceiling going to be like a screen?
I hope so.
It's very jarring and confusing to look at.
Yeah, but the technology, who knows what, if we already have the Sphere now, who knows what kind of, you know, screen technology we're going to have in 2028. But I would say, too, the last thing about, the scoreboard and the players is, listen, I know you want to make it feel like, the A's are going to play there. So here's Brent Rooker and I know Brent Rooker had a very funny back and forth with our friend Foolish Baseball about his own potentially inflated stats. But to me, I think they should have used this opportunity to think even bigger picture, to think even farther yeah. ahead. They should have put the names of, you know, some top draft picks over the next couple of years that they are definitely going to be taking. Put the name of like a big free agent. You know, maybe they should throw Vlad Jr.'s name in there because they're going to sign him because they're going to start spending money here in the next couple of years. Let's get wild. You know, put Nick Kurtz in there and Travis Bezzana and, you know, all kinds
of
fun names. Yeah, both of them. Sure. Or whatever. I guess we could talk about, you know, 2025. There's all kinds of guys that you could put in there.
Free agents.
Ethan Holliday.
Free agents after 2027 going into 2028. Nolan Arenado, Ozzy Albies, Freddie Freeman, Javi Baez, Luis Robert Jr., Alec Manoa, anybody who debuted in 2021. So A's, dream bigger, boys. Dream bigger.
Yeah. Last thing on this. Let's talk about the on-field. Again, this is kind of getting back at the AI renderings, right? You tweeted about this, and it is one of my favorite parts. Okay, so we get past the dugout railing, the no dugout railings, no nets, whatever. Let's talk about this single umpire wearing baseball pants. This is an incredible depiction. I'm like, damn, like, why don't umps wear baseball pants with high socks and pads, or no pads, I should say. It really just brings it back. Some people have pointed out maybe there's a second ump kind of peeking out behind the shortstop. But from what I can tell, this guy's on his own. It's like a little league game.
Look, okay, maybe there is a second ump. That's still not enough. It's still two fewer.
Also, having watched many a D3 baseball game where there are two umps, if there's no one on base, oh, I guess there are guys. There's guys on first.
Wait
and third
a second.
Or are those the base coaches?
Either there are no base coaches, or there are guys on the corners with the guy on third base taking a very uncomfortable lead into foul territory.
Yeah, there's a lot. And then what are these Angels jerseys? Very confused by those as well. Anyway, okay. So you understand why we find this very funny. I'm sure there's other details that we've missed. But listen, this is kind of how it's going to work. Like, had this been a situation where the owners had proven to us that they were able to competently, achieve such a transition and clearly had a clear plan to pay for it and all these things, we'd be looking at these renderings and be like, oh, that's so cool. That's what the new stadium's going to look like. But when you consider the context, we're going to laugh. So,
and compare this to the Rays renderings that we've gotten recently. There are a lot of things to make fun of in regards to the Rays. However, their renderings look good and realistic and are encouraging and make people in Tampa excited about the idea of a new stadium. I can't imagine this is the case for the A's. One more thing for me on this. The A's, a lot of people noticed this with this tweet when the A's tweeted this out. The A's have had their replies turned off on Twitter for months now. Okay?
Like spring training scoring wins. Graphics. they do not want to hear from you. Now, you can still retweet and quote tweet.
We know some of the people like in A's communications, like on the social side, right? Like the media relations people. And I don't know if they have a hand in this. I like those people. There's no way that these people like woke up one day and were like, we got to turn replies off. This is coming from on high, right? This is cowardice. This is cowardice to literally, like, I know it's Twitter and the world is not Twitter and whatever. But to literally shut off emotive communication through which your fans can express how they feel about your team, to shut that down is just so indicative of where this franchise is at right now. They are a total and utter embarrassment on so many levels. And every additional thing that comes out, I am more and more skeptical that this whole Vegas thing is actually going to get done. I still think it will. I'd put the number at 80%, but every additional goofy flub takes it down one percentage point. Because this is a real undertaking. To pick up a baseball team and move it somewhere else requires logistical competency and aptitude that these people have not shown at any point over the last few years. So color me skeptical.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. And listen, as we've mentioned, like this actual story about the, we're going to take the opportunity to talk about these renderings because of course we are, but this is still going to be in the news. Unfortunately, you know, for better or for worse, just in terms of the updates that we get, and we will continue to follow it as best we can.
One more thing. The picture from the outside, all right, from like behind the stadium looking through the glass, day game, mid-July Vegas heat, sun shining through those panes. It's going to be like a psycho kid killing an ant with a magnifying glass. Those outfielders are going to be big.
So again, there's every, you look at them for an extra 5 seconds and you'll find something different. But anyway, if we missed anything, let us know. baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We will certainly continue the discourse around those. All right, Jake, let's talk about another small market team. One with a ballpark that doesn't need fixing whatsoever.
Don't touch a thing.
Don't change a thing. We don't need renderings in Pittsburgh anytime soon because PNC Park is absolutely beautiful. I wanted to take some time to talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates on this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbecast because they've had an interesting little run here, particularly in spring training, in terms of giving us spring training things to talk about. And I want to start with the peg of news that Ben Cherington, the GM, said yesterday that Paul Skeens, last year's number one overall pick, will be starting the season in the minor leagues. Now, I don't think this took either you and I by surprise too much, but I think for, and this is totally fair and understandable, for some more casual fans who heard about this guy as the most hyped pitching prospects in Steven Strasburg and who watched clips of him in spring training, you know, blowing 101 with ease with a nasty slider, you think like, what are we waiting for? Like, what the hell? This guy has to be one of their five best pitchers. And while I do think that there is a chance that he is one of their five best pitchers right now, he's thrown six professional innings. That even Paul Skeens said that when asked about it yesterday. He's like, listen, not that I don't think I can do it, but I've thrown six innings and I understand it. He's going to go to AAA. He'll be up at some point in the early stage of the season. But let's stick on Skeens for a second. What was your reaction when you heard this news?
Duh. He threw six innings in the minor leagues last year. Just because he can do it doesn't mean it's the best thing for his development. I think big league teams doing prospect manipulation over the past couple decades has warped our brains a little bit, where we see this and we think it's prospect manipulation. And there's probably an element of it, right? Of
service
wanting
time,
to get
specifically.
Him service yeah. time yep. stuff, yep. right? Mm-hmm. And like, there's maybe an element of it here, but he's thrown six innings.
Yeah.
Six innings. That's not even...
He's going to throw more innings this spring than he did, you know, in...
Old Haas Radborn outdid that in every start of his career. Basically, you know what I mean? It's not like a problem that they're not starting him in the big leagues. It makes a lot of sense to me. He's looked really good in spring, and Pirates fans should be excited, and he'll be up at some point this year, and hopefully the team is good when that happens. I actually think, Jordan, we need to backtrack a little bit and go before Skeens, this news. The big article that came out at The Athletic about the Pirates being disorganized as an organization. What was your large scale takeaway from that?
So again, a little bit more context just to give that, because this was a few weeks ago. There was a story in The Athletic basically highlighting, I don't know if disorganized is necessarily the perfect way to frame it, but it was essentially looking at the disconnect combined with the frugal nature of the ownership and the ways that they have chosen to spend money, not just on the payroll, but also kind of moving their budget around to ensure that they are never spending too much money. It's like, okay, great. You want to improve these facilities where you're going to have to take it out of payroll. You want to improve this, you're going to have to take it out of this. And the way that that is hindered, generally, not just the, you know, of course, ability to compete on the field, but also player development, communication, and basically people being on the same page in this organization over the last, you know, decade or so, certainly since we've seen them in the postseason and whatnot. And that is stuff that we've heard for a long time about Pittsburgh. It's stuff that since Ben Cherington took over, we've heard slightly less of. And we've, you know, John Baker, who they, you know, hired as a farm director, someone we really believe in, someone we think is kind of moving them in the right direction. To me, this is a really big, and this is, again, spinning this forward to some of the players we're talking about now. This is a massive year for them to, not that there's pressure on them to make the postseason, but to show signs of progress across the board in the organization, specifically from a player development standpoint. There is absolutely reasons for Pirates fans to continue to be extremely frustrated with the level of investment put in by ownership in terms of the major league payroll. And unfortunately, I don't see that changing necessarily anytime soon. Now, okay, you could say, hey, credit to them. They extended guys like Mitch Keller. They extended Brian Reynolds. Maybe we'll see some more extensions as well of guys that they've developed. But it is about turning the talent that they have acquired through a lot of high draft picks and turning it into actual major league quality players. Because that's something that we saw last year with a team like Cincinnati, a team that was very, very, very bad. And then suddenly a lot of their young players took steps forward at the same time. And suddenly they're a 500 team and looking to compete this year. They need to have a step forward like that this year. There's too much talent, too many top picks, too many guys that we've heard good things about to actually start translating to wins. They were not that bad last year. They really
weren't. I want to bring that up. They took a 14-win jump from 2022 to 2023. Now, granted, there was a little bit of luck mixed in there. By comparison, the Reds took a 20-win jump from 2022 to 2023. There were good things about the Pirates last year. Not enough.
Yeah,
and we are overlooking this a little bit. O'Neill Cruz, who had a season-ending injury in April, is still a potential game changer. Now, I'm more skeptical about him actualizing all of his talent because he's now 1 year kind of behind schedule from a developmental standpoint. That being said, remember, this guy has hit a baseball harder than any human being has ever hit a baseball recorded by motion
tracking
technology.
In Major League Baseball, you know, with
in the history.
Yes. Yeah.
He is number one. He is the hardest hitter. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to be the greatest player. Duh. Mm-hmm. But I think Foolish Baseball tweeted this out the other day. Like, we need to be more excited about O'Neill Cruz than we have been as a ball watching world.
Yeah. Because he will be starting at shortstop and, you know, probably leading off on opening day. I saw him last year doing that on opening day in Cincinnati, and he took a Hunter Green fastball and hit it, you know, 115 to the top of the right field seats in Cincinnati. And like, he has that physical ability, but we've seen flashes of that before, right? But it's going to be about those next steps for a guy like Henry Davis, someone who we, of course, big believers in. We've had him on our podcast before, a guy who has had a very strange trajectory, not just as a prospect, but particularly the last year or so, where he was demolishing the minor leagues, right? There was a reason that he was in the big leagues last year, that he did get up there that quickly, and then he really struggled, and the Pirates were not letting him catch. And we have a situation this year where Andy Rodriguez, who was another catcher that they had, you know, kind of developed and big league ready, he had Tommy John over the offseason. They're in a situation now where Henry's going to have to catch some amount. You know, they have Yasmani Grandal, who they brought in as a veteran that's going to catch a lot as well. But Henry's going to have that opportunity. Most importantly, it's about the bat. We've seen the bat kind of show flashes of it this spring. It's guys like that that you need to have take steps forward. Leover Peguero, right? We've seen Jared Triolo come up. Nick Gonzalez. Like, they have a lot of guys that are at the upper levels. That's what's going to have to happen. Because the pitching, especially in the minors and in the upper minors, is really exciting. There is a lot of pitching prospects, not just Skeens. Jared Jones, we've seen throwing 100. He might be more ready than Skeens. He might even have a better case for being in the opening day rotation than Skeens does. There's a lot of guys coming behind them, too. There's a lot to be excited about there, but it has to translate to success in the big leagues. And we've just had limited samples of that so far, of it actually coalescing altogether into wins. But it's possible. It's there. And Andrew McCutchen talked about this yesterday. He had a great quote talking about reflecting on 2013 when they were in the playoffs. The start of that season, they were not expected to be very good. And he saw as the season went on, it was like, oh, wait a minute. We have something here. And the people started showing up. I saw this firsthand in Cincinnati last year. They had the lowest attendance in ballpark history in May, and then it was absolutely bumping in June when McClain and Ellie were up like that. So if Henry Davis is hitting, if O'Neill Cruz is looking like an all-star, people are going to show up in Pittsburgh, obviously, right? And that is a really, really, really great baseball town. So I hope it happens, but the pressure's on. They really got to start showing it this year in a very real way, and I hope they do.
Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we will talk about spring training injuries. Woo-hoo!
Woo!
We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Spring training is a time of optimism until it's not. Because the injury bug flies around Florida. I think the way to say this would have been, mosquitoes aren't the only bugs flying around spring training camps, as the injury bug has bit around as well. Thank you so much.
Oh, great introduction to this depressing segment, Jake. Yeah, I mean, this is something that we have to, like, we know is going to be a thing every single season. In the right, as pitchers and catchers are reporting, it's like, hooray, look at our favorite pitchers throwing baseballs. And then, you know, in the first week of camp, you get kind of a wave of, oh, yeah, you know, this guy's not feeling great. Okay, he's a little bit behind schedule. We had that with Kodai Senga. It was really the first big one. Like, oh, the shoulder's not doing so great. Okay, we get that, you know, with Justin Verlander. We already knew he was going to kind of be slow to come back. We've had a bunch of little here and there. Uh-oh, he's slow. Okay, he missed a bullpen. All right, he's behind schedule. But unfortunately, Jake, yesterday we got probably one of the worst updates that we've had regarding this. It's certainly the most dire, at least thus far. And that is Lucas Giolito, the newest Boston Red Sox pitcher, who they signed, you know, really their biggest acquisition this winter. Reportedly, you know, has damage to his UCL, and is, while we don't have anything for sure, but I would say, honestly, the fact, it's as simple as the fact that Alex Cora said, we are concerned, when so often with these other times, guys say, like, the language used around these injuries is, we're going to see what we have, you know, we're going to take second opinion, blah, blah, blah. Like, the fact that Cora already said, like, we're concerned, this is a bad day, like, that kind of tells me all I need to hear. And I mean, listen, obviously, you know, we love Lucas. We were really excited to see what he could do with Boston this year. I thought it was a great fit for him. I thought it was a great fit for them. Regardless of the larger context of the Boston offseason, I really did think that he was a good fit there. And the irony and the reason why this really sucks is, one of the big reasons why he was such a good fit there is you kind of knew what you were getting from a bulk and durability standpoint. That's something that, even with the performance kind of fluctuating, he's been there. He's posted the last few years, and I know that's been a goal for him. But this is just a massive bummer, and I hope it isn't. I hope this doesn't eat into his 2025, because it does seem like it's going to wipe out a good chunk of his 2024.
You know, I was at Red Sox camp a week and a half ago and saw him throw live, and the stuff looked electric. I mean, like, it was 95, 96 with real ride. Mm-hmm. He was showing two good secondaries. He looked really good. And then I think one of his first starts in spring, he was flashing kind of a new shape on his slider that graded out really well, and people were really excited about the pitch mix. And so this is just a bummer for him. His deal, I believe, has an opt at the end of this year. If he does end up having to get surgery, he won't take the opt. He'll rehab with the Red Sox, hopefully coming back next year. If we do get the real news that this does, that he is going to get cut open, then we'll deal with that then. What does this mean for the Red Sox? I see it from two different angles, okay? Mm-hmm. On one side, it's like, much respect to Lucas. If Lucas Giolito missing the season was so crucial, was integral to your success, you were doomed already. Like, if the Red Sox were going to be good with Lucas, they were going to be good without him. If they were going to be bad with Lucas, they're going to be bad without him. Maybe, yes, okay, if he takes a big step forward and he's like a top 20, 15 pitcher in baseball, it takes them from what, like 88 wins to 83 wins, right? But that's a very generous reading of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think if I tend to look at this through pessimistic glasses, evaluating the Red Sox leadership group, they are not going to be more motivated to spend now. I think they're going to be less motivated to spend, because they didn't think the team was good enough to supplement 2 days ago when his elbow was good, right? Mm-hmm. Why are they going to believe in this team now that it's gotten objectively worse?
And that is the key there is right. The first instinct is, oh, now they need Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell even more. And like, that is technically true. And maybe that is where they land. But I agree with you. And everything coming out of the people that have been covering the Red Sox every day is that sentiment, which is that, oh, yeah, well, they already didn't believe in them, so now this is just an excuse. But I agree with you that that kind of speaks so loud. If that is the case, not that we didn't know that they didn't really believe in this team as a legitimate contender this year because of the way that they've talked about it and letting their young players grow and we're building towards a stronger future in 2025 and whatnot. It's really disappointing because while I am still looking, of course, now at this pitching staff without Lucas, and I'm like, yikes, there's good players on this team. I look at this lineup and I look at the young core offensively, and Devers, who's capable of having, you know, an MVP. Like, I'm frustrated that they are still, and I know you're in the AL East, and that's what's why you're kind of taking this outlook, and I recognize that. It's still frustrating to have this amount of talent and just say, eh. You know, I feel this way about a few teams. I feel this way about the Mets in a lot of respects. You know, I feel this way about, now again, let's compare them to the Giants again, which we have all offseason. Another team that seems to be pretending, despite their lack of pitching health and depth, they're like, oh no, we don't need a starter. We're good. We're going to trust the young guys. Like, same exact thing that Breslow was saying yesterday about Josh Winkowski and, you know, Garrett Whitlock. And like, oh yeah, these guys are going to start for us. Like, we're feeling good. Giants saying the same things. Like, yeah, you know, we have Mason Black and we trust in Keaton Wynn and all these guys. It's like, okay, that might be true too. The thing I want to wrap, just comparing those two teams, is like, who do you believe? I mean, at this point, I feel way better about the Giants than the Red Sox. They both have massive uphill battles to climb here. But just for this season, who do you feel more optimistic about for this season, the Giants or the Red Sox, in terms of making the postseason? I mean, I maybe it's too obviously the Giants at this point, but they both have huge challenges ahead, and we've been comparing them for a lot of the same reasons. What do you think?
I lean to the Giants. I mean, this is, postseasons are not won because of optimism, but I just think the energy there is a lot better. I think, yeah, Bob Melvin in year one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Giants have a green arrow pointing upwards, yeah, in some direction. Yeah. The Red Sox have a red arrow pointing down.
Yeah.
No doubt for me. This is, yeah, related actually to something I'm writing about on Friday. Mm-hmm. Is spring training too long?
Mm.
Is spring training too long? Talked to a lot of people about this when I was down in Florida. And the consensus that I got is, why does this need to be 6-7 weeks long? Pitchers nowadays are so built up and ready to go by the time they get to camp that they don't need all that time to be ready to throw 5-6 innings in a start. Back in the day, players would show up to spring training, bellies full of beer, and use that time to work their way into shape, right? Now, people are showing up to spring ready to rock. And so all we're doing by having such a long spring training is increasing the likelihood that we're going to get catastrophic season-altering injuries during that time. Now, yeah, there are some, yeah, players, let me say, there are some players who like the amount of time they have. They feel like they can build up gradually and casually and get themselves ready. But think about it like this, dude. This is the longest these people spend in one bed all year, mm-hmm, is in spring training continuously, right? They're going back to the same place to sleep every night for like 55 days in a row.
And I talked to some people about this in Arizona too. And like, yeah, it's such a big split between like the position players are so done. I mean, this is why they, yeah, pack up their bags and leave in the fifth inning. Part of me totally sees that, and I think that there's a great argument that because they are so much more ready to compete early on, especially the pitchers, they're throwing so much more in the offseason that why can't we just start it on March 1st? That's fine. I also feel like it's just so random with these injuries, and we still are not sure exactly what they need. And especially when a guy like Lucas, you know, hurts his elbow at this stage, right? A guy that he was exactly the kind of guy we expect to be healthy, to we're just going basis off of what they've done the last few years and the track records that each of these individuals have. And then guys that have, or that seem like, oh, Chris Sale's going to get hurt. He looks great. He looks 100%. He's throwing really hard, and who knows how much that'll last. So I think that overreacting to the injury specifically is not necessary. I don't even think it's, I guess my point is, I don't think it's as much about the injuries as much as just like the pitchers in general are
already. But I don't know. It's just a really hard thing. This is, again, like such a massively important question for the entire health and existential nature of the sport is how do we keep pitchers healthy? And I don't know if the length of spring training is necessarily the number one thing related to that. But I agree. It is interesting.
But the dynamic at play here, right, is the teams and communities are making so much money off of spring training, right? So like spring training is like a multi-hundred million dollar endeavor for Florida and Arizona. There are local areas in these places that are like financially, economically reliant on an enormous wave of people coming down there every February and March. And like shortening that by a week is like a huge financial punch to the gut. That's certainly worth noting as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of elements to it, but again, like it's just, that's every day you just hope that you're not gonna, when you get that pass the notification, especially now when we still have free agents out there, it's like, oh, Jeff's reporting something. Oh, that's not news I wanted to read on my phone. That's not good. No. So we'll see if this impacts, the Snell Montgomery thing. And obviously, in some ways, this is kind of what Boris is counting on, is that pitchers are going to get hurt. And when we talked about this with Matt Chapman earlier this week, that's why I did say it was a difference between the pitching and the hitting market, because Chapman and Bellinger, you know, it's harder for them to wait around and be like, oh, someone will get hurt. So it's a little bit different. Whereas with the pitching, it is a little bit easier to do that. Two more topics, Jake, before we say goodbye here. First, I wanted to talk about Tyler Glasnow, who I wrote about today for Yahoo. And I chatted with him for a while when I was at Dodgers camp a few weeks back. And just thinking about his transition and kind of how he has evolved as a pitcher and just a character in our universe to where he is now with the Dodgers is really interesting to me, because he is someone, of course, who came up with Pittsburgh. I think the interesting thing with Glasnow is that he really wasn't that big of a deal in high school, even though he was, 6'8" in Southern California. He wasn't throwing that hard in high school. Do you know where Glasnow was committed for college? Now, I know he was like totally set on signing, so it's not that relevant, but it's kind of shocking. On the Mike Trout committed to ECU spectrum, it's pretty impressively random.
I'll say like the University of Portland or like Portland. Washington.
Portland is correct. I don't know if you
Wait,
knew that.
What? And,
yeah, I don't know if that was just in the deep recesses of your brain, but he was going to be a Portland pilot.
Nailed that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I did not know that. I was so certain you were going to say the University of the Pacific, and then you really pulled it out there.
That was kind of nuts.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that was just a total Hail Mary dub or if you actually knew that at some point. But anyway, yes, Tyler Glasnow was committed to Portland.
Let me eat my Jameis Winston W for a second.
But to that point, it's like, he was a tall right-hander in Southern California, so people knew who he was. But Pirates pick him, and like it takes a while for him to really find himself in the minors. And then by the time he's throwing outrageously hard and has this outrageous stuff, he has no idea where it's going. And so he gets to the big leagues, and he's just like, he can't throw strikes. He's going to be a reliever. And then after that trade, man, it just all comes together. He becomes an amazing starter. But with all those injuries, we just see it in intervals. We see it in intervals. And the point that I would make is like, he's a career high 120 innings. Well, I'm glad that 120 innings came last year and not 4 years ago, right? Like he is coming off arguably his healthiest stretch that he's had. And he once again looked like one of the best pitchers in baseball. And so now he goes to the Dodgers, where it's not like the Rays weren't getting the most out of him, but I'm so fascinated to see what little tweaks he's going to make. We see a little reporting from Jeff Passan that he's maybe working on a two-seamer. I think that's fascinating, because the two-seamer is part of why he stunk with Pittsburgh. Part of the evolution with him when he gets to Tampa Bay is get rid of that thing, throw four seamers at the top of the zone, work on your curveball, let's go with the vertical attack and stop with the two-seam horizontal stuff. So I'd be curious to see if he actually adds that. But from a personality standpoint, he is one of the best we have in the game. He is so comfortable in this higher profile setting, even though he's not getting nearly the attention that he would in 90% of other camps. And I think that's also a dynamic that I'm fascinated by this year.
I would say if I was picking one baseball player to be the bachelor, he's the one.
Yeah. And I do believe he is taken. But yeah, it's still the correct
to be clear. I'm not advocating for Splitsville. I'm just saying from a personality perspective.
He is he's as good as it gets, and I'm rooting for him, man. He's listen, I know a lot of people are gonna be rooting against the Dodgers, but he has a good attitude about that too. And you know, of course I asked him about like what's that element too, right? Like the Rays, I know some people were rooting against the Rays by the end of his tenure for different reasons that had nothing to do with the personalities on the team. But he's like, yeah, like if you were good, then if we play good, then we're good. And if not, like people are going to talk a lot of shit. Like, yeah, like he understands what he's a part of, but he doesn't, he would not want it any differently. He is, he's really excited. So anyway, so you can go check out a little bit more from Glass now there. He is, he's definitely someone I'm very excited to watch this season.
Awesome.
One more topic, Jake, and this is something that was highly discussed on Twitter yesterday, mostly for the right reasons, but also because we have stupid people on the internet. Some of the wrong reasons. And that is that MLB The Show announced that you can now play as a woman in Road to the Show. They are introducing female characters for the Road to the Show career mode. MLB The Show is a game that we don't play very much. This is a game that you would assume, oh, Jake and Jordan, they must play this all the time. No, quite the opposite. And
COVID. During COVID, yeah. it took my life over for like 2 months. And then I had to drop it like a bad habit.
Yes. But I think the reason why I wanted to say that is part of the reason why we don't like MLB The Show, or it's not that we don't like it, is that we just can't really get into it, is that it's really difficult. And it's become increasingly, whatever, realistic. That is not what makes video games fun, okay? And whether or not this is realistic or not, because by the way, putting women in the game is awesome and such an obvious way to just grow the scope of the game and get more people involved in it and get more people want to play it, not to mention just like paint a realistic picture of hopefully what we have in the future, which is women playing Major League Baseball. But it's just like, it's fun, it's cool. You should be able to get on a game and live a baseball, you know, fantasy. That's what video games are about, right? Like that seems like the most no-brainer thing in the world, to the point where I can't believe this hasn't happened sooner.
Well, I think that my take here is very simple. If this pisses you off, like if this ruins your day, this news, and makes you want to tweet about it, you're already lost.
Yeah,
like your priorities are already out.
And those people aren't listening to the show, so I'm not worried about that. But there were some fantastic responses. And the last thing I'll say about this is it did also make me appreciate backyard baseball. And I know we reference backyard baseball all the time on here. But it has been pointed out before in the reflections on that game, because what that game was in 1999 was having characters like Stephanie Morgan and Keisha Phillips and Angela Delvecchio dominating on the same field as Ken Griffey Jr. and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And like when we were five, and when you're advertising that to children, like that is also a powerful message and something that hilariously is now not being recreated in a similarly powerful way until 2024. Right. But it is a reminder of how kind of revolutionary that game was and why it still resonates with so many people to this day. And so, and just a reminder that we should probably probably play that again on stream at some point, Jake. We should probably bring back the power hour at some point before opening it. Maybe we should do that. Anyway, okay. So shouts out to MLB The Show. That is very, very, very cool. All right, Jake, let's be done. No more podcasts. I'm done talking. Thank you all for listening.
No more? Ever?
No more. Until Friday. We'll be back on Friday. Okay. Don't you worry. We'll be back on Friday. Probably not as much A's and Pirates talk, but I'm willing to have my mind changed in the next couple days. So, again, we barely mentioned that Shohei guy on this episode, and I'm proud of
it. Don't know who that is.
But we'll be back on Friday. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Brett Rader for producing as always. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Keep those emails coming. We'll do a mailbag here in the near future. And Jake, next week, we got to start previewing this baseball season. Opening day is coming up. So we should probably start thinking about the season in a little bit more serious terms and not, you know, renderings of a stadium in 2028. So you can look forward to that for next week. But until then, thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you all soon. Goodbye.